You're listening to the Cyclocross Podcast by the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. Rafa exists to improve your ride with the finest kit, inspiring stories, and vibrant clubhouses across the globe.
Hello, this is the Cyclocross Podcast by the Cycling Podcast in association with our friends at Mud Eater. My name's Lionel Burney and I'm in the Amstel Experience Cafe in Valkenburg again. This evening joined by Renat Schotter. How are you, Renat?
Oh, I'm great. It was an amazing day and a thrilling day. We shouldn't tell all from first, but an unforgettable day, really. I mean, it started really shitty, but I feel great right now and we had some amazing races.
And also, welcome to the podcast, Balint Hamvas. Hope I got that right.
Yeah, perfect.
Thank you very much, Balint. Well, you arrived this morning. What were your first impressions when you got up there and you saw the state of the course?
As we talked about this in the kind of preview with Daniel, this was the first time that I saw this course really, really muddy. And so I think it was a bit of an unknown quantity. And I think it just made it really, really, from a photography point of view, it was amazing to have all this mud and it was slipping and sliding. And it was a really cool day.
It certainly was. I mean, there was a lot of cross and some cyclo, and there was some running upstairs and there was some slipping and some falling over. Balin, the highlight of my day has been the better balls that we've just enjoyed. You said very tasty, but you don't really want to know what's in them.
To be very honest, my favourite is the frikandel, which is kind of made of the same thing, but it's just a bit longer. It's like a sausage, but it was very nice. It was very nice.
Renat, maybe you can tell us what is in it and we'll feel a bit queasy maybe.
The way they make frikandellen is really very intelligent. I mean, they the remainders of the carcasses of the dead animals are being stripped off the carcass, and then they make that into one delicious meat dish. So it's really a really very, very high cuisine.
I apologize to our vegetarian and vegan listeners who may be tuning in, but they're I think a delicacy. They're very tasty, nice with a mustard dip. Anyway, on with the cyclocross. We're going to talk in this first part about the women's race. The result really went to form. Sana Kant won for the second year in a row, but it wasn't really a straightforward race. There was a lot of nip and tuck, very close between her and Katie Compton for a while. At one point, Compton was in the lead, the American rider. Then they were neck and neck, and then Kant's strength in the final part told. Meanwhile, just behind, there was the battle for the bronze medal between Lucinda Brand of the Netherlands, and she got the edge ahead of Christine Majerus of Luxembourg. So before we talk about the race, let's hear from the three medalists in ascending order, from bronze medal Lucinda Brand, then Katie Compton of the USA, and then the champion who defended her crown successfully, Sana Kant.
In that last lap, I came back and I thought, just went over and standing on the pedals and maybe she will crack then, and then I can continue in my own rhythm again. But and luckily it worked out like that, because I didn't have that much left anymore, so yeah.
What did you make of the course? There was a lot of running, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was really a lot of running and anticipating from when you jump on the bike and off the bike. And it was a really, really tough circumstances.
Katie, that was a heck of a battle. When you were in front, did you think there was a chance to crack Sana?
Oh, there's always a chance, but I know Sana, I know how hard she races, I know how bad she wants to win, and she's really strong at the end of races, so there's always a chance when we're going back and forth that way, but she was faster at the end, she was stronger. I just really struggled a bit on the running, and then I just got tired, so I did the best I could, and you know, second is what I could do today. There was more running than I wanted. I would have liked to have a little bit more riding, because I'm better at that. But, you know, it's a cross race. Sometimes there's running, sometimes there's riding, sand, mud, dry. You got to do it all. And I'm fairly consistent at a lot of courses, just apparently not the best at some of them.
Lastly, Sana seemed to change her bike quite a lot, where you were riding through the pit sections. Maybe you were changing your bike in other places. Was it roughly even, do you think, on the bike swap?
Yeah, I lost a little bit of time coming into the pit at one time when she didn't. she closed up the gap there. So that was kind of frustrating. But I think we were changing pretty consistently. I was changing almost every half lap, at least every lap. It was just the bikes were getting heavy and muddy, and rocks were getting in the shifting. So I was losing a little bit of gearing. But it's so muddy, and the conditions are so tough. The fact that electronic shifting works in these conditions is pretty amazing. So.
Congratulations. How does this year's race compare with last year?
I think it's difficult to compare. So last year it was a battle with Marianne Vos, but now it was with Katie Compton. She also deserved to win. She also rides from September until the end of the season, and she's really, really strong. But I'm happy I can keep this nice jersey.
Was it a relief when you got the gap? Did you know you had the jersey and the medal in the bag?
No. It was really fighting until the end. So if you make a mistake, the gap is fast. It's small. So I was happy I could when I saw the finish line.
So Renate Sanakant there, she really turned on the gas in the last second half of the last lap, really, and that was where she pulled away. Do you think there was a particular point where she had the race in the bag?
Yeah, I do, actually. What struck me, though, in her first reaction after the race was that she said that she thought it was over, that she would lose it entering that final lap. And then the turning point, really, was the penultimate bike change in the pit zone. Katie entered with a couple of seconds advantage, and she looked strong, but then somehow she had a bad bike change and she started running really early in that section, and Sanne made a terrific comeback, and then by the end of that zone she was leading, which was astonishing, and that was a turning point. Spoke about it with Compton afterwards. She admitted that was a very important point. Kant said the same about that moment, so it was really a turning point in the race in the final lap.
But she was the strongest rider overall, whether running or riding, Balint.
Yeah, definitely. She was just going really strong, and to be honest with you, I thought after the first two laps, it was done. She was just going to ride away and we're going to have a boring race. And then that's when Casey Compton started to come back, and that was just quite impressive and quite a sight to see. We looked at it, and the last time Compton was in the front of a world championship race was back in Louisville in 2013. So it's quite a while, and she's been trying to win the world championship race, and I think she came the closest for a long time now,
and possibly the closest she will come. And of course Louisville was home soil. I know the America's a huge country, but you know that was a course I presume that suited her. But she came really strong. She's had success in the World Cups this season. Were you surprised that she coped so well with the muddy conditions? Because she did say in our interview with her, you know, she would have preferred a little less running.
Yeah, and I think it was a big surprise that she did so well in Nome 2 weeks ago, because she just came back from the Nationals, and that always kind of wreaks havoc on their form, on the American riders' form. So when she won and Katie Keogh was second, that was just like, wow, so maybe Compton might do really well at the World Championships. So I was expecting her to do well, and she won this race before, so she knows this course in and out.
It's an amazing result she's put in once again. I mean, like Mark Legg, her man always says, jet lag is a myth. And she's playing with time zones like nobody else, and it's really astonishing to see her performing at today's course. And I think everybody in the cyclocross world would have liked to see a win from Katie Compton, and there was this particular moment in the pit zone that was really breathtaking. I was looking for Mark Legg, her man, and he was standing there in his pit with his eyes closed just for half a minute in the midst of the race. I think that sums it up. I mean, he really was like, I don't know what he was doing, meditating or anything, but he wanted her so badly to win because he's sacrificing himself, his life for her, which is, to me, very touching.
So Sanakant, though, was the strongest rider. In terms of how the course played out, people who might have been watching for the first time or haven't watched a lot of cyclocross, maybe they would think, this is crazy. Surely this is, like, can't they postpone this and play the match on a day when the pitch is in better condition? Not many sports put their competitors into an environment where it's just, I mean, it was survival of the fittest, really, wasn't it? Is there in the cyclocross world any point where people go, oh no, this is too much, this is now a farce? Or would you say, look, if they have to run 70% and cycle 30% of the circuit, is that still a valid cyclocross race?
It is mentioned in the rules, but I don't think we got near that point today. And cyclocross rules is about making little things bigger as well. I mean, it was an issue, and everybody, of course, is then talking about it. And is there too much running? Is there too much mud? I was speaking with one of the UCI guys, and he said, look, if there's no mud, everybody's complaining the race course is too fast. And now that we have mud, everybody says there's too much mud. So I think we had a terrific Worlds today in great conditions, which were really propaganda for cyclocross in its own.
On the subject of the course, let's hear a little bit from Helen Wyman, who finished 13th riding for Great Britain. Britain's best finisher was actually Nikki Bramier, who finished in 11th. But Helen Wyman, she certainly had no beef with the course, and she said it suited her down to the ground.
It's one of my favourites because there's no ice and no snow, and there's a lot of mud, and there's a lot of running, and it's tough, and a lot of tough power watty riding. And so, yeah, it's a really hard course. Everyone knows it's a really hard course, and I think it's fantastic. I think it's very fair. The strongest rider wins, and that's what you want of your world champion. All the running was short, so you're running up a run hill, you're running up steep banks, you're not actually running. And a lot of, like I said, a lot of the places I was riding where others were running, and so the course actually flows really, really well. And like half of the course is actually downhill riding, so the all the way from the start you go down all those banks and stuff, and then until you get to the first rut where you have to run, and that's probably like 800-900 meters. So you're flowing a lot, you're doing, it might seem it from the outside, but it actually flows really well, the course.
Okay, so when we look at the rest of the results, a couple of things, you know, from my kind of layman's eye, really, the big names that didn't perform today, maybe not such a surprise, Marianne Vos. She was down in 18th position. You know, she's had a difficult season, hasn't she? It's not been her best year. Was that about par for her, or do you think if the course had been firmer and faster, she would have done better, perhaps, Balin?
I don't think so. She just hasn't shown a good form this year. Last year, when thing leading up to the World Championships, she was just winning almost everything. So the fact that she and Sana Khan was kind of dueling in the last couple of laps, that was, I wouldn't say predictable, but that wasn't a surprise. I think this year, if she was up on the front, that would have been a surprise. So I think the course didn't really matter. She's just not in the form to be at the top in the front, near the front at the moment.
Yeah, I saw her at the finish in the mix zone. She's pretty disappointed looking because she's just not used to that kind of result. Even on one leg, we're used to seeing Marianne Vos finish in sort of contention for the podium, aren't we?
Yeah, for a 7-time world champion, it was disappointing. But at the other hand, I spoke with her for sports shortly before the race, and then you could see that she didn't believe for 1 second she could manage an 8th world title today. So basically, she knew she was not able to win in front of her home crowd, and I think if you look at her past, it's difficult for her to compete in those conditions. If you're used to come out and win like she did in the past, and then now you have to battle for in the further distance, then that's really, it's difficult also mentally, I think.
The Dutch did get a good result, though. Lucinda Brand in third place. And this is, I guess, part of her. She's going straight off to a road training camp from here. So this is kind of the start of her road season almost, particularly for her keeping an eye on the spring classics, Nieuwsblad and so on, going towards, you know, Flesh Wallonne and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Not ideal conditions today, perhaps, but certainly a real sort of anaerobic workout, definitely. Or is it aerobic workout? We need a sports scientist on here for that. You know, that was a good result for the Dutch. So they did something on home soil, gave the crowd something to cheer. But I did notice that the Dutch went very quiet when Kant got herself into the lead and all the Belgians started cheering. I don't know whether you guys saw many of the people out on the course, but quite a lot of the Belgian fans had already started celebrating long before Kant got into the lead, and some of them were slipping and sliding over on the mud as they came out. I think perhaps one or two less beers would have been advisable for them. What about Pauline Ferrand-Prévot as well, 24th? I mean, Renard, you were talking her up yesterday, and that really is a surprise.
Well, I'm glad I was wrong, of course, because with Kant, Belgium is really happy. But at the other side, I think Pauline obviously she was still hampered by the injury from last week. I mean, she didn't want to say before the race that it was admitting her being 100%, but I think that is the only explanation, because this is really, for her, it's not a result on her level.
How about you, Balin? Anything else from the results or anything else you saw out there on the course today that caught your eye?
I think a lot of people were kind of supporting Kristin Majerus, who last year it was her kind of home world championships in Luxembourg, and so she finished in seventh place. And so I was just wondering, as I was watching the race, that she finished today fourth, but if she was kind of getting the support of the home crowd, would that kind of prepare her to a podium place? I guess we'll never know, but that is definitely a good result. And I'm really surprised to see Elisabeth Brando in the fifth place, which is I don't remember her seeing her that high up for a very, very long time. The interesting thing is that lots of people are saying that this is a mountain biker's course, like it's really good for mountain biking, and yet it seems that the best mountain biker is probably Eva Lechner in seventh place. So maybe it was too muddy, or there was too much running. Like, quite often you could see that certain parts, like the off-camber part of the course, it was so steep that it was faster if you jumped off the bike and just ran. So maybe that was the reason that the mountain bikers didn't really have an advantage on this course today.
Mountain biking is a summer sport, and I think once the mud gets in, it's a different ball game, and that was proof today. Today's race, it was clear that the mountain bikers lost their advantage on the climbing sections, because it was mud all over the place, so it was completely different.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
A.V. Richards will start her final lap within less than 30 seconds from now. En vanuit onze commentaarpositie, we daar in de verte naar beneden rijden op de grote brug. A.V. Richards, de koploopster, met een interessant duel. Ik zei het u al, om de nummers 2, 3 en 4. Daarbij rijden het ook de Nederlandse Seilin Del Carmen Alvarado, de Oostenrijkse Nadja Heidel. En Harriet Harden, die lijkt wat de terrein te moeten prijsgeven, Nico.
One lap to go in the battle for the rainbow jersey, the battle for gold, silver and bronze. Here she is, the lady in fourth position, getting the vocal support from the crowd. Final lap of the race, A.V. Richards. Problems, I think, with the change.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycle O-Cross podcast and the Cycling podcast all year. If you want to get 25% off all Science in Sport products, you can go to the website scienceinsport.com, and then when you check out, having filled up your basket with goodies, enter the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25, and you'll get 25% off the bill. You just heard there a little bit of noise from out on the course, the announcer basically heralding Evie Richards as she went through the finish line for the penultimate time. With one lap to go, the under 23 women's title was well in the bag. A very impressive performance by Richards. She's still only 20. This is the third year of the under 23 women's race at the Cyclocross World Championships, and her record is gold, bronze, gold now. Pretty much dominant. And you wonder, when will she make the step up to competing at elite level? We'll hear a little bit now from Evie Richards. She was obviously delighted to win the rainbow jersey and gold medal. That was a very convincing win, but it didn't at any stage look easy, and you went pretty deep, I think.
Yeah, no, it was a really, really hard race. Probably one of the hardest races I've had in a long time. So I just had a bit of a crash early on, just because it was just so overwhelming, and I've been bigging this up in my head for so long, and when it happens, it all happens really quick. So I dug from the start, and then I had a mechanical, and I just had to really focus and just keep pushing on. And I think because there's loads of running, it just drains you so much, this sort of race.
In terms of coming into the race with a lot of expectation from yourself, I guess, was it different to a couple of years ago when, you know, no one knew what to expect, I suppose?
Yeah, definitely. I didn't get to bed till 4:30 this morning. I've just been like worrying and like been going through this moment for so long. So yeah, it's completely different, but I've put the pressure on myself, and that's how it should be. I'm a professional cyclist now, and that's my job. So yeah, the pressure should be on me, really.
In a funny way, did the early fall kind of help you focus the mind just warn you that anything could happen on the course?
Yeah, I think I just like really shook myself. I was like, come on, Evie, get yourself together. You need to concentrate now. And I dug deep and then just like got to the start where I wanted to be and out of any crashes and everything. And yeah, then I was in my zone, as you could say.
Were you aware that it was Harriet who was just behind you for quite a long time in the race?
Hattie's an amazing rider, and I was so pleased when I heard she was behind me, and just like gutted she just missed out on the medal. But she's a first year, and it's absolutely amazing like how well she's riding, and she's from Malvern as well, so that she goes to the Turbo sessions I go to. So I think it's a big thanks to Liam Killeen and Tracy Mosley for helping us out so much at home, and Simon, my coach, has been amazing as well, supporting us like through all this.
Evie Richard also said that her next big goal is the mountain bike race at the Commonwealth Games a little bit later. So today she was not really pushed, and I did ask her whether the early fall was just that little event that focused the mind and made sure that she made no mistakes. I mean, she kept the pressure on all the way through, and right after she'd finished, crossed the line, collapsed to the ground and had to be carried into the tent, get washed down and changed. So it was although she had a good margin and it was a comprehensive win, she certainly didn't let up on herself one moment.
Well, after the finish line, she looked unconscious to me, really knocked out like a boxer. She was carried out like it was a boxing ring, and maybe that was the right description of today's race. It was a boxing ring with lots of uppercuts and stuff like that. I mean, the crash she made in the beginning of the race, really that was one of the trickiest points in the race course, because there was tree roots, yeah, it's so simple. The tree roots were actually being liberated because it wasn't muddier enough anymore, and that was very, very traitorous, and that's why so many people crashed there. They tried to avoid the tree roots, but that was really impossible. And to me, the women's youth race was really an epic race, though it was won by quite a margin by Evie Richards.
To be fair, Renard, I don't know what tree roots are in Flemish, so I'll let you off that one. It was an impressive performance. I spoke to Helen Wyman a little bit about Evie Richards, just to get an older rider's perspective on just how good she is and how good she can be.
Oh, she'd easily be in the top 10, if not the top 5. She won a World Cup. She won an Arman World Cup. I don't know. You never know. You never know until she's able to ride it. And everybody's on their peak for this event. In Arman, she beat everybody that was there. She had a really good day. And other people had some problems, like Lechner punched it, I think, 3 times or something. But even so, she won. So she's one of the strongest riders out there. And last weekend, she was 3rd in Hoogerheide on a really crazy fast course. So 2 very different courses. I think today she seemed a bit stressed beforehand. I've never seen her like that before. Maybe the expectations are really high. But she actually took it on and she took the race on. And even when she had a problem, she still stayed calm and won.
Helen Wyman there making the point that if Evie Richards had ridden a senior race, she would have been comfortably in the top 10. Is that how you see it, Balint?
Definitely. I mean, she's in a terrific form. She won in Namur the elite race. She came 3rd last weekend in Hoogerheide. So she's in a really good form, and we might have to eat our words because she's a mountain biker. So she was probably the only mountain biker today who kind of excelled in today's conditions. So I think the only threat to Evie Richards is that she's going to kind of leave cross and she's going to focus on mountain biking solely in the coming years. But if she stays in cross, anything is possible for her.
Well, it's going to be one of those questions for next season, isn't it? Whether or not she sticks another year at under 23 level. It doesn't seem to be an awful lot of point doing that. Keep winning the same race a third time. It wouldn't mean as much as even getting, say, a bronze or a top 10 in a senior world championships, I guess. An impressive performance, though. And, it's one of those things from our point of view as a British journalist as I am, or Irish technically, but have a keen eye on the British riders. But it's a funny thing. You see that talent and you want to kind of put it into context and, you know, where could that talent take her? Obviously, mountain biking is, it's another string to her bow, but whether she could translate that into a road career as well. I mean, it's very hard to say, but are there any signs there, do you think, Renard?
Well, that's a very difficult question, Lionel. I don't think I'm able to answer that one because I guess I don't know enough about her, but she's really very impressive, and if you think about her first world title 2 years ago, that was her very first cyclocross, international cyclocross ever. So I think she's quite a limitless rider, and she reminds me a lot of the male bloke you also have, Tom Pidcock. So she's the female version of Tom Pidcock, both with limitless potential, and I'm curious to see where it's going to end.
Or maybe Tom Pidcock is a male version of Evie Richards. I mean, it works both ways round.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much to Rafa, our headline sponsor here on the Cyclocross podcast, a little tree root of the cycling podcast that we've established here for the World Championships here. And if it goes well and if you like the show, we would like to be able to make it a regular fixture of the next cyclocross season, which starts in the autumn. Just before the Rafa jingle there, Renat made the point about the British blokes who are doing quite well at cyclocross. Last year, of course, they had the 1-2-3 in the junior men's race. Tom Pidcock won, and Dan Tullett was second. Tom Pidcock and Dan Tullett will be in the under 23 race tomorrow, and well, Ben Tullett, Dan's younger brother, went one better. It was a really impressive performance. He tussled with the World Cup winner Thomas Kopecky of the Czech Republic for quite a lot of the middle section of the race, and then just pulled away at the end. Let's hear a little bit from Ben, understandably delighted to win the rainbow jersey. First of all, you were in the lead for a little bit and then Kopecky came back. Was there a part of the course on the final lap that you thought, that's where I need to push on?
Not really. I was going pretty deep when I got away. We're on the second lap, going to the second lap, and I saw that he was coming back a bit, so I sat up, waited for him to come back, and then I gritted my teeth again and I really just went for it. I just thought, rainbow stripes, there's nothing better than that, he's got to go for it.
Was there a moment that you knew you'd cracked him?
I cracked him going through the last, sorry, this, the pits with half a lap to go. I knew that, yeah, I had to dig deep there, and yeah, my legs were really hurting. I just knew I just had to keep them going.
How hard was it with all the transitions as well, on and off the bike, swapping bikes as well, yeah, legs feeling like jelly?
It was a proper cross race today, just everything, deep ruts, mud, slippery sections, power sections, just all of it. Just.
Who have you got supporting you here today?
The whole of British cycling, so I can't thank them enough. The work is just incredible.
And what about going one better than your brother did last year?
Yeah. A bit of brotherly love, yeah.
After I'd spoken to Ben Tullett in the mix zone, I bumped into Dean Downing just outside. He was wearing one of those bobble hats that everybody seems to have here at the Cyclocross Worlds. His was in British national colours, red, white and blue, and I'd said he now needs to swap it for a rainbow version, because Dean Downing has been coaching Ben Tullett. He's known the Tullett brothers around 10 years. Dean Downing, of course, road rider, national crit champion. As I'm saying all this, Renard's just put on his woolly hat. He did say he was equipped for all weathers, and that's is that a cyclocross woolly hat? I think that might be advertising. We're not going to be mentioning that brand on this podcast. Well, anyway, let's hear a little bit from Dean Downing, who knows Ben Tullett well. Well, Dean, the rainbow jersey looks good on him, eh?
Yeah, it looks pretty good. It looks pretty good. There he is. Yeah, what a day. What a day. I've come over here with Alistair, Ben's dad, and most people know, I've known the Tullett family for a long time. We're all personal friends, like 10 years probably. Yeah, so I've seen the boys grow up, Ben and Dan both. So last year was special, seeing Dan take silver. But today's been bonkers, it really has. It's unbelievable. Just proof of his commitment, I think. He's committed to everything with cycling.
He certainly committed on the last lap, didn't he?
Yeah, we were watching on different parts of the circuit and big screen, and with just under a lap to go, so over a lap to go, he came alongside Kopecky, and Alistair said, oh, what's he doing? I said, I think he's sizing him up, see how he's doing. And I asked Ben about it afterwards, and he said, oh, kind of, I just wanted to know how hard he'd been going, and tried to work out, and Ben said he was struggling himself with a lap to go, and he thought he was going to blow, but then I think it was over just after the finish. Kopecky put a massive effort in and gapped Ben a bit, but then he must have blown after that, and Ben went over the top. I'm guessing that's what happened, and yeah, he's world champion.
So, Renard, what do the Belgians make of all these British blokes coming along and doing well? It's at your discipline, really, isn't it? It's a very much a Belgian thing. Hasn't quite translated yet into success at the senior level for the men, but this group of youngsters, I mean, have they caught the eye of the Belgians covering the sport?
Yeah, of course. The general feeling about it is that British cycling is working with all those talents like they do on track, basically. So if they prepare them to be peak level on the one day, that's really important at Worlds, and obviously very successful, and obviously the reservoir of talents is also quite big in Great Britain. And I do sincerely hope that the organizational side of the story will follow, and that we have World Cup soon across the channel, because I think that's an important step to make in cyclocross development. And if the organizations follow, then you will have more talents even coming to the races, and then it will be a circle of success. I mean, where will this story end? And I just hope British cycling doesn't think about cyclocross as a non-Olympic discipline. It's just a great discipline, and you can develop riders for huge performances and great performances, great results, and I think it helps British cycling in its total image as well.
It's like you read my mind there, Renard, because I wanted to make a point about the World Cup. There was a World Cup in Milton Keynes a couple of years ago, and in terms of the crowd, that turned out a very successful weekend. So it does show that there's a crowd and an audience for cyclocross in the UK, whether it be a World Cup or a World Championships. The big thing that kind of holds it back from a British cycling point of view is because it's not an Olympic sport, and because the way cycling is funded in the UK, you know, all along the lines of where Olympic medals can be won, that's always going to have an impact. But I think British cycling certainly have stepped up, because it's a pathway into the sport. If you can get kids doing cyclocross, you can assess talent, you can move them on, you can, you know, see whether they would work in other areas, other disciplines in cycling. But that thorny question of cyclocross and the Olympics, I mean, one of the questions that always comes up is whether it should be considered an Olympic sport for the Winter Olympics. We've got the Winter Olympics coming up in, where is it now? It's in South Korea. That's coming up very soon. I mean, is this something we could even have on the radar? I mean, is it a daft question, Balint? Should cyclocross be in the Winter Olympics?
It's a definite yes. I think it would be a no-brainer. It would be a new discipline that's kind of different from all the other disciplines. It would be an exciting, it doesn't need an awful lot of infrastructure, unlike quite a few other sports. It wouldn't take up, like, the problem with, like, in cycling, that in the Summer Olympics, that they have a certain number of disciplines, so if something comes in, there's something has to go out. So, but in, you know, the Winter Olympics, the UCI wouldn't have this problem. I think the big problem is that the IOC wants ice or snow by definition in the sport, and we quite often get that, but you know, you can't guarantee it. So, and I think in terms of how people view cyclocross, because it's just an afterthought in the grand scheme of things in most of the countries outside of Belgium, and if it was an actual Olympic sport, that would just kind of up the stakes probably all over the world, because that would just open up, you know, all sorts of new possibilities.
Let there be no doubt about it, cyclocross has an Olympic status in Belgium. But yeah, the rules have to change for starters. I mean, the ice and snow thing you just mentioned, Balint, I think it's in the rules of the Winter Olympics, so they have to change the rules first. And also, it has been discussed before by people within UCI, with IOC, but apparently the times are not ready for it yet. So it would change the whole sport of cyclocross if it would become Olympic, I'm quite sure, because then British cycling would immediately fund it with that brilliant lottery system they've put up in the UK. So let's just cross our fingers and hope it happens one day, but I'm not sure it's going to happen that soon, because change program at Olympics, it's so difficult, it's a slow process. If you look at the reintroduction of the Madison, it's got off the program in Beijing, after Beijing 2008, and it only will get back to it in Tokyo 2020, so that's 12 years that's two Olympiads without Madison, which was a real disgrace.
Well, I mean, that's the Belgian point of view, isn't it? A Madison racing is the next big staple of Belgian cycling, isn't it? We talk snow and ice. The forecast is for temperatures to dip tonight, not quite to snow and ice status, but with how wet the course is, it could become stiffer. The mud could get thicker. It could become even more challenging to the bits of it. Just about rideable now might become not rideable, or it's not going to firm up enough, I don't think. But from what we've seen today, what are we expecting tomorrow, Renard? And do we change our assessment of who the big favourites are for the men's race tomorrow afternoon?
I expect more punctures than today because of the conditions. If it stays dry like this, then more rubbish is maybe not a good word, but the
are you trying to say that the sludge and the ruts that have been made will firm up? Also, all the stones have been churned up in the mud, so you think there's a higher risk of punctures maybe tomorrow?
I'm quite sure. I've heard that from a couple of team leaders, and usually those guys know even way better than I do stuff. So, and then we're back to this Luxembourg game. Last year we saw, of course, the big drama in Luxembourg unfolding with the four times flat-tiring Mathieu van der Poel. You just don't hope that it happens again, but it was part of the game and it cost him the world title eventually. So also the mental game will step in then quite fast, because if it's very muddy, then Van Aert already lives up to the occasion. He knows mud, that's my thing, that's my occasion, that's my chance. And then the mental game plays a role, but Van der Poel is so self-assured, so a lot will have to happen to disrupt him, I think, mentally tomorrow.
What do you think, Balin? Based on what we've seen today, how do you think it will play out tomorrow?
We just saw before the juniors men's race that there's got to be a new tyre for Wout van Aert. And if you remember last year at the World Championships, it was said it was all about the tyres, because Wout was riding this old Michelin green tyre, and everybody was just like, where did this tyre come from? And it was like Niels Albert's kind of old stash, and he just said that's why he was supposed to not have as many punctures as the others.
Are you saying there's some kind of tyre doping going on in the world of cyclocross? Is it kind of like the old Belgian guys are putting vinegar on them and they're hanging them up from like Parma ham and that kind of thing to mature?
I went to see Richard Neuhaus, who's the Ducast tyre factory's owner, and he's a proper geek in a good sense. He just knows so much about tyres, and so he was showing us today the tread for tomorrow's race and all the tricks that went into creating this set of tyres. And sometimes what he does is he prepares a certain set of tyres just for one race. It costs like €400, so not everybody can afford it, but that tyre is going to be the best tyre that you can get. So there is definitely an arms race going on here, and it's probably a dark art.
Talking about food again, eh? He's treating the tyres like pata negra, eh? For sure.
I have to say, I'm seeing a new business here, an opportunity. Maybe I could set myself up as some kind of tyre guru, come up with a medicine or a mixture. I'm thinking, I don't know, some kind of cheese and Vaseline, rub that on your tyres before a big cyclocross race. I mean, a lot of these kind of things are, I mean, obviously it's not a matter of the mind to not puncture, but you said there, Renard, about the, you know, Van der Poel's four punctures last year. At some point, you think, well, this is not my day. I mean, so the mental side of it, in something like this, when a slip or a puncture or a mechanical problem or just your bike getting clogged up with mud could be the difference between gold and silver, it's all to play for, isn't it?
You just hope it doesn't happen again for Mathieu, because 2 years ago, it was the same. It was the bike... Their bikes were twisted with each other, and then Wout came out as the winner, the mental winner of that, and Mathieu was in the background being miserable. And I do think that this year his mental condition has been stronger than in the previous couple of seasons, because everything was running smoothly for Mathieu apart from a couple of unmentionable sicknesses. But for the rest, he's had a dream season. He's still aiming at a record number of victories. If he loses tomorrow, then everybody will say that he's the loser of the season, which is really not it doesn't reflect reality, because he will, for me, stay the man of the season.
Well, this is what we want, isn't it? We want to see a finely balanced battle between two riders. We've got Van der Poel, who has dominated in the World Cups. We've got Van Aert, who's won the last two rainbow jerseys. It couldn't be more finely balanced. I'm going to be very unfair. I'm going to put you on the spot. Balint, tomorrow, who wins? Van der Poel, Van Aert, or someone else?
I'm going to say Lars van den Haar.
Renard.
Well, if I have to pick not Van Aert or not Van der Poel, then I'll go for the mudman, and that's the former European champion, Toon Aerts. He might pull off the surprise of the day, because mud, he's sleeping in mud.
He's sleeping in mud. Well, I saw the Toon Aerts fan club come in today, all in their jackets and hats. This joke might not work on you two, but I've already called them the Toon Army, which is a nickname for Newcastle United football fans. So we'll look out for the Toon Army tomorrow. We'll look out for the Van der Poel fans. We'll look out for the Van Aert fans. I'm going to sit on the fence and say, because if I say I don't know who's going to win, I can't be wrong in tomorrow's show, can I? So until then, Renard, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Lion.
And thank you, Balin.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Become a friend of the podcast at thecyclingpodcast.com. Not only do you get access to exclusive feature-length documentary-style episodes, you help us provide free daily coverage of all three Grand Tours. This episode was edited and produced by Will Jones.